Oh, hey, didn't see you there. Welcome to Secondary Fermentation, episode number 90.
Nothing rhymes with 90.
I'm having a very hard time thinking of something that rhymes with 90.
Yeah. But, you know.
Pinty class. Pinty.
We are both 90s kids. So.
Yeah, we're both 90 years old. We're sound young.
Some days I feel like it.
Yeah, but this is Joe, and of course I'm joined by...
Nick, but Pirate Nick, because my eye won't stop twitching, so
arr, I need an iPad matey. Or something. And don't forget the parrot on your shoulder.
I'm Nick.
I'm. But we're here. We're back for episode number 90. Last episode, we talked about clean beer, clean energy with breweries, you know, kind of seem to go hand in hand. But we're back for another episode. We're actually in the wake of, you know, one of the biggest hurricanes that I can remember, and definitely caused a ton of damage for Western North Carolina. Surprisingly, we were spared. You know, usually I feel like Eastern North Carolina, closer to the ocean, usually hit by hurricanes. I don't really think of the mountains as being really hit or devastated by hurricanes like that. So,
yeah,
I'm sure you've seen on the news lots of flooding, lots of deaths, lots of you know, just really hard times for people, and lots of breweries affected too.
Yeah, Hurricane Helene was not very kind to the South, and particularly Western North Carolina, but yeah, definitely had a lot of people reaching out, checking in on us here in Greenville, but, you know.
All we got was like 2 hours of rain.
Yeah.
Like literally, it just barely was anything as it passed over them and flooded everything.
Yeah, now we've got another Category 5 hurricane on the horizon for the Tampa Bay area.
Yeah,
who knows if that'll travel up this way.
The projected like path is very interesting. It just like sweeps over Florida and then goes out back in the ocean.
Yeah.
But hopefully everything stays safe with that, getting hit hard twice in just a few weeks span.
Yeah. I feel pretty bad because I was just telling somebody in the last few months about how hurricane season seemed pretty mild the last couple of years. Like, we just didn't see a lot of major storms kind of affect us anyway, but you know, now, you know, two storms like you said in just a short span of time, so it's like Mother Nature's trying to make up for the the lack of storms maybe, but they're intense and they are rough. But yeah, like you said, Joe, there's a lot of breweries and families and businesses that have been affected in particularly like the Asheville area and other parts of Western North Carolina. So right now, you know, a lot of government-aided relief heading out that way, trying to get, you know, resources, trying to get the roads clear. For one, it's difficult to get in and out of those areas with roads being flooded and or blocked or damaged. So really just they're in dire need of, you know, access to clean water, food, energy sources. I think for a while they were without even like cell phone reception, which was really scary for people trying to reach out and contact them. So things are kind of trending in the right way. You know, the governor has put out a lot of information on the governor website, governor.nc.gov. There's some press releases there that talk about the recovery process and the resources that have been sent out thus far. I think they've passed, FEMA's been able to now offer more monetary assistance, and, you know, of course they're trying to get as many resources out there from the government, but also cool to see a lot of places in North Carolina banding together to do collections, like donation type drives, and then bring those, you know, pet food, diapers, things that people drastically need, bottled water, and bring those to Western North Carolina directly to people to kind of get them through this time until they're able to rebuild and kind of, you know, reestablish their life. Because right now things are, you know, a lot of people are displaced and without access to basic needs.
Yeah, there's lots of ways to get involved with stuff if you want to just check out things. I mean, obviously this is a beer-focused podcast, so a lot of the stuff on our Instagram feeds are from breweries in the area. You know, some of them completely wiped out, some of them sort of spared but without power or water, and doing their best to distribute some of that water as a resource. I saw something about Dissolver, you know, was emptying out their cold liquor tanks and distributing that as clean drinking water for folks who didn't have any. So, but a lot of those breweries and stuff have posted links to charities and other things. Just as always, be aware of scams. There's lots of stuff out there that money doesn't go where it should. So looking through official channels and everything, probably the best.
Yeah. And, you know, check your local brewery. If you're in North Carolina, you know, just kind of scan the pages, see if they're doing anything. I know a couple around here have been doing drives in Greenville, and then Casita Brewing Company in Wilson has been doing a lot. They've been loading up vans and, you know, shuttling stuff out west. So just kind of look around for places that are trying to do donation drives. If you want to donate money, there's actually a secure link, I guess, on the NC.gov website. Check that out. It's also on that press release from a couple days ago, or October 5th, if you're, I guess, listening to this, October 5th would be more helpful. but there's a press release, and they've got information to volunteer resources and donation resources if you've got the means to do so and are looking to try to help people out. So hopefully, we're clear of any other storms this season and people can start to rebuild out in Western North Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a heavy intro to the podcast today.
I know. Well, I feel bad too, because, you know, Jen and I just were on our trip to Europe during that weekend where the storm came in. And so we had really no idea what we were going to expect when we came back. We saw a lot of stuff on our phones and social media and things. And I got a couple texts, people asking, you know, if we had any damage. And I was like, you know, truthfully, I don't know, because we're not there.
Yeah.
But I hadn't heard anything from, you know, you guys or anybody around here. So I kind of assumed, you know, we were pretty much clear, especially based on the trajectory of that hurricane. But it was really tough to see that from afar too, and just, you know, understand like the gravity of how bad that storm was. But yeah, so I don't know really how to segue away from such a heavy topic, but
all right, well, let's crack a beer, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
So what do we have in front of us, Nick?
Ooh, I'm really excited for this, because we're kind of, you know, officially at the end of the official Oktoberfest season, but it's not too late to have Oktoberfest beers.
Prost.
Prost. This is the Warsteiner Oktoberfest.
Yes, Warsteiner. If you've listened before, you know that I love picking up a case of Warsteiner at Costco. They usually have that, but I saw the Warsteiner Oktoberfest, had to grab it, special edition, decked out with the blue and white Argyle, I guess. Is that this pattern? I don't even know.
Yeah, kind of checkered out. It's like,
that's the typical, like, you know, Bavarian blue and white. In the classic Warsteiner gold, and emblazoned with the Das Einzig Wahre, which I think translates to the only true.
The only true Warsteiner.
So this Oktoberfest, got a nice case of it for like $20, so pretty good deal.
Oh yeah.
Wow, I just poured that with so much foam.
Well, I think the beer itself, it just has a lot of that going on, because mine, I tried to be pretty careful with the pour. I wanted to preserve a nice little collar of foam in my glass, and I did so. It's really a tight, you know, tight collar there. It's like almost has the texture of like meringue, just like tight bubbles, and it's looking really persistent, and a lot of rising bubbles too inside. So I think there's a ton of nucleation in this bad boy.
Yeah, and I was hoping to be able to fill my glass all the way, but I got too much foam, because I am drinking from an official Warsteiner glass.
That's a nice looking Pilsner glass.
You actually got for me as a gift. You got it from like an antique shop around here.
Yeah.
And for those unfamiliar, I'd say Google it, check it out. It's a nice looking beer glass. It's just a very tall, tapered Pilsner glass. Almost like a champagne flute on steroids, kind of. It's got the classic, you know, measurement for 0.3 liters of beer, which the cans of beer, which actually it's funny, you don't really notice it at first, but they're slightly smaller than standard American 12-ounce cans, because these are 330 mils.
That's right.
So 11.2 fluid ounces. So the cans are just a little bit shorter than normal.
And it's 5.9% ABV, which is kind of funny for Varsteiner because, you know, the original Varsteiner is a very light Pilsner. And now to have the Oktoberfest be, you know, pretty on par with the actual beer ABV at Oktoberfest in Germany.
Yeah. But in the glass, this beer is a, you know, kind of like a golden amber color. It's slightly tinted to the amber hue, but it's still got like, it's almost like a golden honey kind of a.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Crystal honey, clear.
Honey is a good descriptor.
Tight white foam, like you said. On the nose, lots of malt. Very slight earthy hop. Dip my nose in the foam.
It was inevitable when you have a collar foam that tall. Mm. It's pretty clean. Oktoberfest. Leans malty. Not super sweet.
Yeah, it definitely leans on the maltier, more like caramel profile.
A bit of a dry finish. Like you said, that kind of that earthy hop aroma. It's also, I'm getting a little bit of that kind of like earthy hop spice in the flavor. But overall, pretty malt heavy and just, goes down pretty smooth. Ends a little bit dry as well, but really, really solid. It's got a pretty crisp mouthfeel too.
It does, yeah.
Compared to some Oktoberfests, you know, tend to be a little bit more on the thinner side. This has like a bright presence.
Mm. Overall, good beer though. Enjoyable and not bad for like a off the shelf case of beer, you know.
Definitely.
But since I'm drinking this out of my Varsteiner glass, you know, Nick just was in Europe. And he noticed that a lot of breweries have their own specific glasses. But I guess before we get in that, do you want to talk a little bit about your trip?
Yeah, and kind of along the way, I'll just mention that or allude to what Joe was talking about. But yeah, Jen and I went to Europe. We had a just over week-long trip, including a brief stop in Amsterdam. Went to the Heineken brewery there and did a tour. Got to do actually our own pour of a Heineken beer. And that was pretty cool. I mean, I'm not somebody that would say they would drink Heineken on the regular, but I think it was much better just getting it, you know, fresh off the tap there and not in a green bottle that's been sitting on a shelf for months. Definitely loses the, you know, you don't have that oxidation problem that you get typically with kind of commercial Heineken. Or if you want to, you know, buy a can of Heineken, you probably avoid that problem as well.
Nice skunky green glass beer.
Yeah, definitely was much more palatable just at the Heineken brewery. But
I've not had a Heineken in a very long time. I think I should try it again.
Yeah.
Give it another go.
And part of it might have been it was more enjoyable because of the experience.
Yeah.
Like, it was a really cool tour. I mean, if you've done a brewery tour, you probably won't learn anything new from this one other than the history of Heineken itself. But they have a cool little bar, like, kind of in the lower level of the brewery. Once you finish the tour, you get a couple tokens to go redeem for a beer. They just serve Heineken. I think they might serve their, like, Heineken Silver or the light version of it, but they've got these really cool, just tall Pilsner glasses, not stemmed like your Varsteiner one, but just a really cool vibe. It's almost like a little bar down there. It doesn't feel like a brewery. It feels more just like a bar with like the green lighting, the kind of dimness.
Yeah, cool.
They have some music playing. We had a really good time there, though. And then we went up to the rooftop.
Very hip Euro music?
Actually, no. It was mostly like American club music, to be honest. Right. And not even like club music. I'd say just like American pop music.
Okay.
But also, we went to the rooftop there as part of the tour and got another pour up there. And they do a cool thing where they like add this flavored foam on top, which is something unique.
Interesting.
Jen got this, I think it was like it was like mango or something.
Really?
They had two different options. One was like maybe like grapefruit and something else. And then there was like mango, but they just add a little bit of that flavored foam on top of your Heineken. And she really enjoyed it. So,
that's kind of like unique. Berliner Weisse where they add in like this flavored syrup.
Mm. Yeah, you don't see a lot of places like add something to the beer that's not like in the recipe, but yeah, that was a really cool stop. And then we went on to Brussels. In Brussels, we were there for a couple days, so we got to do a couple food tours, or food and beer tours. Got to try a lot of Belgian beers, a lot of Trappist ales. You know, a lot of the cuisine was really good there. And we also went to Brewery Cantillon, which you guys did when you were in Brussels.
Yeah.
And that was a really cool brewery tour. That one, I think I learned a little bit more just because of the uniqueness of the lambic style.
Yeah.
And how the history is so rich in Brussels. And Cantillon is the last lambic brewery in Brussels still. There's other ones in Belgium, but in Brussels, that's the last one standing. And it's been there for over 120 years now. And they just have the original wood, cool ship up in the attic there.
Isn't that so weird? It's just like just a copper holy roof.
With like yeah. And there's like spider webs everywhere. And you're like, this, like, who, is anybody cleaning this stuff? But they just let it be and let the natural bacteria and, you know, bacteria and yeast in the air kind of ferment the beer naturally. It's like a wild fermentation in a cool ship.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this, you know, a certain time of the year. I think it's like October to April-ish. And, you know, and then they end up with a batch of lambic. They then will age that. They'll also make, you know, creeks with some cherries. They'll do gooses with, you know, blends of different years of lambics.
Mm-hmm.
And once you finish the tour, then you get to have a couple tasters up at the top Ooh. Bar there. And they serve those in these cool little kind of small wine glasses. I actually really liked all of them. I liked the creek quite a bit there. Like a fresh, well, not a fresh creek, but like a creek right from the source, like a genuine creek lambic. And I think Jen was not a fan just because it was a little bit tart. Like the tart cherry was a little bit much. But
well, that's the thing. Plus with the lambic, like
you're
in the sour zone.
Oh yeah, and it's such a pleasant sour compared to some of the like American sour ales we get, where it's just like
lactose slammed, kettle soured. Thing. Yeah, it's definitely a different experience for sure.
You leave with like that coating on your tongue, and it's like eating sour candy basically. Mm-hmm. Versus this sourness comes from, you know, the bacteria, and it's a lot more mild, I guess, in presence. But so I mean, I think that the Belgian, you know, kind of triples, quads, doubles, and then your Trappist, and then of course the lambics and stuff from Cantillon. That was kind of a pretty good summary of like the Belgian beer culture there.
When you're in Brussels, did you meet a man who was 6'4" and full of muscles?
No. And
he did not speak your language.
Jean-Claude Van Damme was also not there. Was he the guy? No, he's not 6'4".
No.
Maybe he wasn't the one that was alluded to in that song.
I don't know. That's I'm curious. Maybe just it rhymed well. Worked well in the rhyme scheme. Or the no Vegemite sandwiches.
Vegemite? It's fun. I didn't know the Vegemite would... Oh, wait. Down Under, that's Australia, isn't it?
Yeah. It just... Yeah. I think it rhymed well.
Yeah.
Do you speak my language?
Yeah, that's
he just smiled
song.
And handed me a Vegemite sandwich. That song used to play all the time in the cafeteria at college. Like, for some reason in the dining hall, that song played. I heard it probably once a day.
I can't remember the first time I heard it, but I feel like I heard it in a movie or like a movie trailer or something.
Really?
Long time ago. I had this, like, forgotten memory of it, but... Yeah, and one thing I didn't mention, so kind of going into our topic down the road here with like beer glasses, in Belgium, it's very serious there. They take this like super serious what bars and breweries pour your beer into, what glass they use. And I'm not just talking like the shape of the glass. I'm talking like the branding of that particular glass. So, for instance, you know, we went to this one bar with our tour guide and we got, I got a Chimay. A Chimay triple, and they bring it out like in the goblet, but it's like a Chimay branded chalice or goblet. And you know, another place we went for dinner, I got a Westmalle, and they brought that one out in a Westmalle glass. It's like they don't mess around. Like if you get a beer from one brewery, they will serve it in that brewery's glass, and they have like a stock of each brewery's particular glass
yeah,
in the bar. And so another one we went to, it was just like a little pub, like a corner street pub. And I had an Afflehem, which I think is like kind of a Belgian blonde, I guess, more of a beer, like their typical, like the kind of flagship Afflehem is. And they serve it in that glass. But we saw like a couple other glasses behind the bar. And Jen actually asked the server, like, do you always serve it in that particular glass? And he's like, oh, yeah, like we always pick the glass for that brewery or that beer having. If they're, for whatever reason, like out of them, or if they, you know, they're all dirty or something like that, they have to like ask the person if it's okay if they serve it in a different glass.
Can you imagine if they, like, you ordered this Belgian beer and they brought it out in like a Bud Light branded pint glass?
Right.
And you're like, what?
Well, it's just so funny. Yeah. Cause like, exactly. The inverse of that here in the US is, you know, you go to a, I mean, you could even go to like an Irish bar and they'll probably serve you a Guinness in a Guinness glass. But, you know, if I order an IPA from some regional brewery, they're going to serve it to me in a shaker pint. So, and it's going to be like totally the wrong brewery. But yeah, so we went on there from Brussels to Cologne, Germany for just a day, a very, very quick trip there. But we hit up a couple different breweries / gastropubs, I guess, that have their own Kolsches. That was a really fun experience. The Kolsch there is just fantastic. It's like the cleanest, most refreshing light beer you've ever had in your life. Especially like, you know, you get them in such a small quantity. They pour them in these like 200 milliliter Stange glasses.
Oh, yeah.
So again, back to the, you know, specificity of the glass. The Stange glass is such a unique glass for, you know, getting a Kolsch. And it just, it goes down so well, and it's just so refreshing, and it really helps keep that head throughout the entire beer. Like, you get a little bit of lace down the glass as you drink it down, but it helps retain that head the entire time you're drinking it, and it just leaves such a, you know, just a fulfilling, like, beer experience. It's unlike any other beer I've ever had, really.
It is. It's, like, just cool. Like, you're just, like, and keep them coming.
Yeah, and, like, we got to the first place we checked into our hotel in Cologne. Dropped our bags off, walked up like three blocks to Scion Kolsch, and found a table. And the guy, Zweibier, and he's like, each? Zweibier? And then we were like, sure, I guess. He's like, oh, it's, you know, Tuesday, might as well be Monday. And I was like, I mean, all days run the same on vacation. So,
yeah.
But he brought us each, like, yeah, we each got two Kolsches just to start out. And I had probably two more, and they just go down so easy.
They do.
And they're so light.
Nice
so,
and cold, light. Yeah. They're just such a small quantity. It's just like, bam, bam.
Yeah.
It was so cool, yeah, because we went there. That was one of my favorite, I think my favorite city when we went, because we went 2 years ago now. We stopped there, went to Fru. I don't know how to say it. Fru.
yeah.
Right next to the cathedral there.
The cathedral's amazing, too. That was a beautiful cathedral.
Yeah, it was. And we also went to Scion.
Yeah.
But
we went to Mullen. Cool. Mullen. I'm probably saying it wrong. But that was a little bit of more of a walk into, like, downtown, kind of away from the river, I guess. But, I mean, just both. I can't even pick a favorite between the two. They were both excellent. Yeah, and they just keep bringing them by until you say, hey, I'm done, or put your coaster up.
Yeah.
And they just notch them.
Please.
It's funny because, like, you had kind of described that whole process to me when you guys went. And I was like, that sounds pretty cool. And so I kind of had that build up knowing what to expect when we got there. But, you know, there's clearly some Americans that were at the same brewery as us. And they, you know, didn't know that's how it worked. And so, you know, you could hear the guy, like, telling him, like, oh, when you're done, you put your coaster up, or, like, I'm going to keep bringing them unless you say you're done. A couple of people you could tell, like, he actually would clarify, like, do you want another one?
Mm-hmm.
But for us, like, he kind of just kept bringing them.
Yeah, and, that's what we had when we were at one of the places. I can't remember which one it was, but the waitress didn't speak any English. And she would kind of confirm every time, and I would,
just give a little, like, nod, or, like, you know, two more.
Yeah,
knowing a little bit of German helps, but we were pretty fortunate. I think everywhere we went in Cologne and most everywhere in Munich.
Oh, yeah.
Was, you know, there are people that speak, they're bilingual or multilingual. So Yeah, spoiled Americans. Yeah, I know. I learned a few basic, you know, phrases, but there's a couple times where I was like a deer in the headlights, just somebody talking to me in German, and I was just like, I don't know what you just said, and I would like kind of stare until they said something that I recognized, or like they said a little bit of English. And I was like, I should have prepared a little more.
Yeah, it was funny. I did like Duolingo or something. Now I actually have Babbel was like 50% off for like a lifetime thing, so I ended up buying that. So I'm getting back into doing German again, but like. When I had went, we were on the train, and somebody walked up and asked me, like, what car we were in, and I was, like, able to answer them. I was like, oh, my gosh, the stupid bird taught me how to... But then, like, later somebody said something, I'm like, I have no idea what you just said. Oh, man.
Yeah. You just have to know how to order a beer, how to ask where the water closet is.
Yeah.
I mean, that'll get you by, but... Yeah, so we left Cologne after a day there, and the bulk of our trip we were planning was to go to Oktoberfest in Munich. So we got into Munich, we took the train from Cologne to Munich, and got in kind of late afternoon, or I guess early afternoon, able to check into our hotel, which was great, because then we just dropped stuff off and walked to the Wiesn, and that was kind of an experience in itself, just like finding how to get in. It's such a... You know, you're following a crowd of people, but there's like certain ways in and out, and so you have to kind of find the actual entrance to it. We didn't dress up the first day because we kind of just rolled in. We were like, we have two more days here. We've got our Lederhosen and Dirndl for those days, so we just went in with street clothes, which I was a little bit kind of apprehensive about because I didn't want to stand out and look like a, you know, dumb tourist. But it was actually a fair amount of people that weren't dressed up for it on that day. And the other thing is, I feel like even the traditional like Trachten that the, you know, like Germans are wearing, they've kind of, especially the younger generation, have started to like tone that down a little bit. Mm. Like I saw a lot of younger guys that would wear Lederhosen and, you know, like they'd even had the socks and everything, but they are wearing like Air Force Ones or like New Balance sneakers, or they're wearing just like white Nike socks.
Nelly was like, I'm so proud.
But a lot of sneakers and just like white, like the calf, not calf length, but whatever,
just like basketball socks. Yeah. Like the Gen Z socks.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I was getting the impression that it was more of like, you know, an insult to kind of wear the wrong footwear or like, you know, not even wear, like I certainly don't want to wear costume grade Dirndl or Lederhosen, but, it definitely seems like maybe it's kind of shifted a little bit in recent years to where they're kind of, especially the younger crowds, just accepting of like, you know, a little bit of a hybrid, I guess. But yeah, we definitely had a great time the first day. We found a tent or a table pretty easily just because it was a Wednesday afternoon before the dinner reservations, and
it's Wednesday, my dude.
we sat down with a group that was dressed up, and they were from the States, and we chatted with them for a bit. We had two masas there, and that was plenty for that moment. We hadn't, you know, had a big meal in a while, and so
two liters of beer
will put you down, especially that, you know, 6%+ beer that they're serving in the tents. But you know, great music there, great atmosphere, even without our attire being on point. But yeah, we went.
And I want to say Moss, you said Moss, you know, that's,
yes,
a common, I guess, misnomer or something. Not Moss is the correct term, but a lot of people say Stein, which Stein, I was actually reading something today. It was like, oh, this makes it easy. Stein is like the German word for stone. So Stein is stone and Moss is gloss.
Moss is gloss.
They said Mass is glass, but I refuse.
Yeah.
But
oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it, like the big liter glass of beer that you think about is a Moss.
Yeah,
but it's spelled with like the weird B looking S that I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah,
they have in the German alphabet, but
yeah, I think a lot of people refer to that as a Stein, but yeah, mm-hmm. the Moss is like that, you know, a giant 1 liter vessel that they use, and so. Again, another kind of glassware reference there. That's, of course, very traditional to Bavaria and Oktoberfest.
Esset. That's the name of that Estet. Letter. Estet.
That we know.
Yeah, and it's funny. I did buy a Stein at Oktoberfest. I still have it downstairs. I drank Mosses and bought a Stein.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. We get like the small kind of Steins here in the U.S. too. I actually did buy a Apolliner Moss. I guess it was one of those that I think it was at Tap. They sold it with the liter can with it. And it was like $10. I was like, this is a great deal.
Yeah.
Maybe it was like $15 even. That's still a great deal for the glass and the beer. But I haven't used it in a while.
You know, we were talking. That for some reason just made me think, like we were saying, I hadn't had a Heineken in a while. And they sell those little Heineken kegs at Lowe's Foods.
Oh, yeah.
For our 100th episode, we should just get a couple of those little kegs and drink them.
You know,
they have like a Varsteiner one, too. They have like
I would get that.
They got like a bunch of different ones. So we like go buy them all.
We got to go to Lowe's Foods and get the Varsteiner one. Actually, on the train from Cologne to Munich, in our car, there was a group that had brought on like a mini keg. I don't remember what beer it was. But they brought on a mini keg. It may have been like Aeinger or Polliner, one of the two. But and they also had like brought on some bottles of beer. Like they were just having a good time. You know, pulling off of the mini keg into Red Solo cups on the train. And I was like, man, they're pre-gaming Oktoberfest.
Our train from Berlin to Munich, we got stuck behind the like whiniest Americans. And I was like, man, you guys are giving us bad names. Like they're like, somebody took our seat. Because, like, you know how you, like, reserve the seats on the train?
Yeah.
And, like, this is your seat? Like, somebody, like, made the move, and then they, like, moved a couple over, and then they whined the whole time. And then they were, like, you could tell they were, like, drunk, but, like, whiny drunk. And then they came over, like, you guys want to play Catan? I want to play Catan. Get away from me. I'm also, like, I'm like zero. It was like a red eye train.
Yeah.
Plus with the thing, I was like, oh my gosh, get away.
Like I should have got the quiet car.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of that. The culture of just transportation is so different in Europe, and it's in some ways it's really nice, but, So we went to Oktoberfest the next 2 days dressed up. Thursday was our full day, and we ended up each having 4 beers. Over the span of probably, we got there not long after they opened up for the day, and we left, I think, around like 9 p.m. So we were there for a solid 9 hours. I would say maybe a little more.
Yeah.
We broke out a couple times to get food outside of the tents and just kind of, break it up. We went into 3 tents that day.
You drank 4 liters. That's equal to 1.057 gallons of beer.
And you feel every bit of it in more ways than one.
Yeah.
So, so last day was kind of just like, it was rainy. It was not great. We just kind of went to the carnival most of the day.
Yeah. That's like exactly what we did. We like,
cause you're feeling rainy. Terrible. I don't want to go drink a bunch of beer again.
Mm-hmm. So we went, we did the Ferris wheel. We did like just kind of walked around.
The Devil's Wheel. Did you guys watch that at all?
No, we didn't watch that.
That was pretty fun. That's a good way to kill time too.
Yeah. People sitting on that flinging off and stuff.
It's like €5 a person to get in. You can just like chill there for a while. So it was like raining. We're like, we'll just go in this tent and watch people get flung off this wheel. they have this ride called the Toboggan. Do you see that?
Like the conveyor belt thing that you have to like walk up the.
Oh, and people just eat it. It's so funny. And like they have people, the workers are like sometimes grab guys by the back of their collar and they're behind them just like kind of pushing them, wheeling them up this conveyor belt. But we watched that for like a half hour just because it's so funny to watch people struggle on that conveyor belt and just really kind of like got to see the other part of the Wiesn besides the tents. Then we had to kind of kill time to our bus out of Munich. We were going to Milan just for basically a few hours. Didn't really get into the city at all. Just kind of went to the train station, caught a train to the airport. Then we laid over in Iceland. And Iceland was really cool. We had a great time there. Beer-wise, we didn't have a ton of Icelandic beer, but we did go to a restaurant, Lecoq. Great name. Saw it on a Netflix show, Somebody Feed Phil. If you've never seen it, it's a really good show. Actually, if you're traveling somewhere, maybe scour the Netflix episodes to see if he's been there. And everything that... we went to 3 different places that he went to, and they were all winners. Like, fantastic food. But we had a couple Icelandic beers there. And really, it was just like, it was like the end of the trip. So we were kind of ready just to head back. And so the next day we kind of drove around and killed time until our flight out. Saw a lot of the countryside, and it's like just an incredibly beautiful country. And unlike anywhere you can go in the U.S., it's just, you know, fantastic. We'd like to go back to Iceland just for like maybe a long weekend and see more. But
ice baby.
This is a really good trip. Had a lot of good beer.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of the overarching theme there was like most places we went in Europe, like there's a specific glass that we had for the beers in that country and like for that brewery.
Yeah. And I was just looking through pictures too to see like when we went and, you know, I mentioned the Berliner Weisse, but Lauren, when we were there, got a Berliner Kindle. Which is just kind of there. I think they said, like, it's a girl beer or something.
It's a girl.
But she got, like, the raspberry one, and it's in, like, its own little goblet thing. It's funny. It's got a bunch of foam because from the, like, raspberry syrup stuff they added. And it has a straw. Actually, it's served with a straw.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. And then I got just a plain Berliner Kindle. I got the Pilsner, actually. And it came in its own Pilsner glass.
Pilsner, yeah.
Like a chunky little guy. And then, oh, here's another one. I got a Markischer Landmann. Came in its like own stemmed kind of like wine glass looking style thing.
Yeah, it's like a in between like a wine glass and like a chalice. It's like taller and narrower than a chalice, but it's, I don't know, it has kind of a sharpness to it that a wine glass doesn't have. But
yeah,
nice. The Aphelhem glass, if you can see, I'm sorry you can't see it, but maybe I'll post this on our Instagram.
Oh yeah,
it's like a chalice type, but it's really more of like a triangular shape, like towards the bottom. It's really unique in that regard. But that's again for like a Belgian blonde.
Maybe versus we can like slap some of these for the episode.
Yeah, post. I think I'll slap these. We'll slap a bunch of these pictures so you can see what we're talking about here. But yeah, the like the Chimay was in this, you know, giant like chalice. It feels so cool to like drink out of this thing, and you're drinking like a, you know, 9-10% beer. But I think that's part of the experience. Is like it wants like you want to feel really like regal drinking this beer out of a chalice, and it kind of helps you, I think, savor it a little bit more.
Big
versus like a
rimmed.
Yeah, like you're not going to drink it as fast. I think it's kind of, you know, conducive to drinking it more of like a slow,
more
savory
your sips because you spill it everywhere. Whereas this, like, it's kind of slanted.
Yeah,
at my face, and
down
it shoots me in the face with beer.
Yeah, and I'm actually using a Straff Hendrick.
Yeah, you are.
Belgian glass for my
that I got for like $2. I've never had Straff Hendrick, but I want to now.
I know, and I feel bad because I'm, you know, I'm drinking Oktoberfest out of a Belgian glass, so I'm doing the opposite of what we're talking
what
about.
What is
here.
Good? They're gonna somebody from Belgium is gonna run and slap it out of your hand.
Yeah. So it just, you know, really interesting just how the culture is so much different there as far as how they kind of prioritize using proper glassware. And Joe and I both had thought like we had done more of a kind of a crash course 101 on like
glassware.
Beer glassware, but really we hadn't. We did a little bit on our blog back in the day, which is, you know, pretty barren nowadays. But
yeah, we've not posted anything in quite a while.
But like I think in the U.S., the way that the beer culture, the craft beer scene in particular, views glassware is more like finding a few styles that accentuate beers, like multiple beer styles well. So like, you know, a tulip glass is going to be really common at craft breweries because you can use it for your IPAs, you can use it for a sour, you know, you can use it for your, you know, stouts even if you want to.
Yeah.
Then they're going to have, you know, a couple of them will have maybe like a dimpled mug or like kind of the English pub glass for some of those kind of English styles, ales.
Maybe a Nonic pint for your stouts.
Nonic pint, yeah. But it's definitely not an emphasis on, you know, getting, you know, bars aren't carrying like 10 different branded glasses for that different beer.
Cleaning, all that. They're like, yeah, they don't want to clean it. They don't want to deal with the inventory.
Right. It's all about what's stackable, what's easy to clean. Yeah. Well, and like, I think one notable exception is like Guinness. A lot of bars, if they have Guinness on draft, they'll probably have a Guinness glass. That's kind of like one maybe notable exception I can think of. But for the most part, you're going to get a shaker pint for most of the beer. And another thing I thought was really noticeable too, and I was on Reddit kind of going down a rabbit hole of, you know, why are there differences in beer pouring and like beer glasses between like, you know, some places in the UK and Europe and in the US. One notable thing I hadn't thought about, and you actually mentioned this earlier, on your glass, you've got the marking for the 0.3 liter.
Mm-hmm.
And this glass also has a 0.25 liter marking. Mm-hmm. They actually do that in Europe, I think, particularly because they know that's where like the beer is going to be filled to, and the extra space on top is for your head. Whereas in the US, I think a lot of time you go to a bar, they fill it like to the brim or almost to the brim, and there's almost no head.
They dump the foam out. Yes. Man, that's the worst.
And it's because I think the consensus in the US among maybe like, I don't want to say uncultured beer drinkers, but people that just want to get like...
You uncultured swine!
People are just like, I just want to get a, you know, a cold pint of
you
Bud Light.
You didn't give me all my beer!
Yeah, exactly. They're like, hey, this beer, you know, is half foam. It's not, you know, I'm not getting my full value out of it. And they don't like actually appreciate the value of what the head does for the beer. And in Europe, it's not the case. They actually really emphasize having head on beer. And so they leave space in the glass for that reason. And people have that understanding when they go into getting a beer. One funny thing, actually, from going to Heineken, one of the tour guides, we did like our first tasting part of the tour. And we got these really skinny, like, for U.S. sakes, it was probably like 7-ounce glasses, like really just small glasses of Heineken. And they fill them, and they probably have about an inch of foam in these glasses. And the guy was like, do you guys know why we have foam in beer? Why we keep the foam on top? And I didn't pipe up a ton on the tour. I kind of didn't want to be like a know-it-all or like a, you know, one of those guys. I'm not really loud on tours, but I was, you know, thinking like,
pushed
oh,
your glasses up
yeah.
and said, actually.
I was going to say, you know, something along the lines of, oh, to, you know, have the aroma kind of present, like it brings out the, all the kind of volatile aromas and everything. I didn't say anything, but his response was, it's a protective layer to keep the carbonation in the beer. And I was like, I've never heard anybody say that before.
What?
So then it's like, so I start thinking like.
It's literally made by carbonation escaping the beer.
I'm like, the foam is carbonate. Yeah, so I was like, I think everywhere you go to, they also have, or at least different breweries have their own kind of ideal level of, like, how the beer is poured, too. Like, to get a certain level of foam, you know, the consistency kind of how much beer to foam ratio there should be in the glass. You know, even doing, like, that Heineken pouring challenge at the brewery, the guy showed us, like, here's how we do the perfect Heineken pour. And mine looked good at first until my head started receding really quickly. And he was like, oh, yeah, like you almost had a perfect one. But what he did different was he let it like fill and they let it like kind of run down the side till it's like brimming. And then they close it with like the beer still like dribbling on the full top of the beer, which to me is like it's kind of a waste of beer for one. Mm-hmm. And also, too, I'm like, I've already got a decent head. Like, I don't need to like start with, you know, an inch and a half foam to like really like I feel like we can kind of meet in the middle somewhere there, but
you know,
there's definitely a like a different perception of what's right and wrong depending on what brewery or what country you're into.
You know, it's funny is I stand corrected. I just Googled it because I was like, well, maybe that theoretically could make sense. On a quick Google search, and I'm telling you a very quick Google search, American Homebrewers Association also says, without a protective layer of foam, the CO2 gas escapes the agitated beer, causing it to go flat.
Yeah. I mean, I struggled to, like, you know, make
well,
fun of the guy, but...
But actually, this is an article about physics, a small, like, tap... thing that you slap a beer in and you so maybe it is wrong. Let's see.
Well, I read an article from it's really more of a blog from londonspubs.com, and they may be biased because, you know, this is a UK based discussion blog, but they have a lot of science in there too about CO2 and like what is maybe proper head, like why do we have head, what actually causes head. They talk about nucleation and stuff like that, so it's, you know, not just purely anecdotal. There's actually some scientific substance there. And, you know, they kind of agree that beer foam is, you know, mainly for the purpose of kind of accentuating the aroma and the flavor of the beer. And that, you know, it smells and tastes different actually from whether or not you have head.
Yeah.
If you pour, you know, if you want to have a beer that you're going to enjoy for a long time, the goal should be to have a little bit of head and actually keep that head for as much of the drinking experience as possible. And some beers really don't, you know, line up well for that.
No.
Some beers don't have a lot of carbonation anyway, or a lot of nucleation in the beer to, you know, produce the bubbles. So
no,
if it's stacked against you, that's not going to be a reality. But like some lagers and, you know, different Belgian styles that can produce foam, you know, there's an intentionality there to create just the right amount of foam to where throughout your drinking experience, you actually keep a little bit of that foam throughout. And that actually kind of continues to give you that nice bouquet of aroma. It actually, you know, it contributes to the mouthfeel a little bit. You don't want to expel all the CO2 from the beer itself, because it also takes away from the mouthfeel. And as, you know, we've talked about previously, like mouthfeel actually contributes to flavor a lot too.
Yeah.
The drinking experience is not, you know, one dimensional.
You know, I'm doing a lot of waffling right now. I'm just thinking about stuff and I'm calling bologna again on that.
We're back to bologna.
We're back. Well, and
let us
here's
know what
my
you
thing.
Think. Yeah.
Like, yeah, let us know what you think. And
does a collar of foam serve as a protective layer for keeping the CO2 inside the beer?
And I think theoretically, yes, it could. But one, it's created by releasing CO2.
Right.
So if you have a beer with zero head at a certain point,
all the CO2's
all
in the beer.
All the CO2's in the beer.
Yeah.
And my other point is, how long are you taking to drink this beer that it's just going to let all, you know, that the atmosphere
right.
pressure, all the CO2 is going out in the atmosphere. Like, I can understand it'll go flat after a short period of time, but it's like, okay, you pour a can of Coke, it's not flat. It doesn't have a head.
Right.
It's very carbonated still.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and look up a video from John Taffer talking about like a proper way.
Video.
Yeah. So, I mean, people will tell you, like, you don't want to pour beer so serenely that, like, you know, you're tilting the glass and you're putting the bottle or can like real close and you're pouring slowly so that you get almost no head formation. I mean, that will certainly keep a lot of that CO2 in the beer, but then you're also drinking all that CO2 and you're going to get really bubbly and gassy and kind of that bloated feeling. If you let some of that CO2 expel, get that head formation. Obviously, we just talked about the benefits for aroma and flavor.
Yeah.
But it's also less of that directly going into your stomach, and it won't leave you feeling as, you know, bloated and kind of full of that air.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of it's been expelled and it's dissipated. So,
exactly.
I mean, there's a benefit to that. And they actually show the kind of reaction to how the beer responds once it's inside of you versus, like, the soft pour and a hard pour. So, I mean,
yeah.
Take that as you will.
Mm-hmm.
John Taffer. It's one video he's not yelling.
Yeah. Drink it how you like it, but if you agitate the beer a bit, it gives you some release of volatile compounds. Just as nice. Who doesn't like a beer foam mustache?
I don't
know.
I do.
I do.
But yeah, I mean, just kind of a, I guess not like a lot of concrete data in this episode, but I feel like it was just an interesting experience, like a culture shock from drinking in the U.S. to going to Europe. You know, Joe and Lauren had similar experiences on their trek too. So, you know, you just kind of see how different countries or even continents view beer, how they view serving beer, like what things they emphasize as far as like the serving experience. So, yeah, you'll definitely be surprised if you ever go over there and go to a pub. If you order a beer, they're probably going to serve it in the glass from the brewery,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of, it just feels right. Like
it does feel right.
We've got a Busch Light pint glass at home, and I like to drink a Busch Light out of that every once in a while.
You know, if I get a tingling for a Yingling, put it in the right glass.
Yeah, well, next beer, we don't know what it's going to be, so we don't know what the glass to put it in.
I've got a pick, and it's LC variety, but I will say, disclaimer, this is just going to be Nick knowing because I accidentally saw it.
Oh, no. So it's just
so I'm tainted. I can never have an unbiased review. So
Is your glass prepared and ready?
I will have to give it a quick rinse.
A quick rinse. Cracking of a beer.
Now, I really have to try not to see, because if we both know what it is, then what are we doing here with this LC pick?
What are you even doing? There you are, sir.
I'm still using my Streff Hendrick Belgian glass.
Should allow you for some nice aromatic evaluation.
Yeah, if nothing else, it's not the correct glass for this beer because it's unique to its actual beer, but it's a good shape for a beer, that chalice with kind of a tulipy effect. Yeah, because a lot of chalice glasses, actually, those goblets chalices, they are very much just, they're not tapered in like a tulip glass at the top.
Mm-hmm.
They're just wide vessels. This one actually has that kind of narrowing.
A little taper, yeah.
A little bit of a taper, so it kind of helps. Okay. It's not like a definitively hoppy beer. I'm getting a little bit of hop aroma, but it's not potent.
Just as a side note, while you're evaluating, the Warsteiner glass does not say das einzig wahre. It says eine Königin unter den Bieren, which translates to the queen of beers.
The queen of beers. A direct competitor to the king of beers.
I'm sure I said that wrong. Königin. I don't know.
I'm having a hard time with the aroma profile for this one. I can't really pinpoint a lot on it.
You know, now that I have had several beers with the same kind of aroma to it, you know, actually, I'm wondering, did we have this as an LC pick of the week before? Is she trying to mess this up? Because I remember thinking about the specific aromatic piece, and I have a very, like, specific remembrance of what that is.
Yeah, I mean, it just has, like, a mostly malty smell with, like, a touch of some hop aroma, but it's not like overly, you know, it's not like an overt aroma like dank or, you know, tropical juicy or even like, I guess, like piney. It's just there, but it's mostly masked. And I took a drink. I'm kind of feeling like I haven't learned a lot from the drink. It's overall pretty clean. It almost makes you think of like cream ale or blonde ale. It's not just, you know, it's not tasting like a light lager or a pilsner. It's tasting like some kind of ale. Like there's some yeast component there that I'm tasting. I just looked. Ooh, it actually is kind of a slight haze, but it's like a dull haze, and it's not completely haze through though. It's got like a nice shiny gold color to it. Wispy white head on top.
Wispy.
Oh, I'm having a tough time though. Like now looking at it, it hasn't really changed my mind, I guess, a ton, but I kind of want to lean towards like a blonde ale. That's kind of where my head's at right now because it's not. It doesn't taste hoppy enough to be like a pale ale, or certainly it doesn't taste like an IPA, but it's not. And it's also slightly bitter, so that's kind of throwing me off too. I don't know if it's meant to be slightly bitter, if that's just my palate right now.
Could be. So you said clean.
Mm-hmm.
What are the beer styles are clean?
I Well, it's a lot of... The fact that it's like... I don't know if it's just like chill haze or what. There's definitely some haze to it, though.
Yeah, that would throw me off too, yes. This beer was brewed in Utica, New York.
Ooh. Oh, is this the Utica, like, honey pilsner?
It is the Saranac honey pills.
It's that honey she that did throws
do that.
Off.
Didn't she do that before already?
She might have. I don't remember how it tasted then, but...
I don't remember if she did, but the honey... The honey, to me, always smells like a slight aroma of vomit. It's really not a great thing.
It's so weird. Once you, like, know it's honey and you go back in for a smell, it's like, clear as day.
Oh, yeah.
It's honey. Clear as day honey. And it, like, I couldn't have named that until I saw what beer it was.
It's kind of got, like, that Honey Nut Cheerio kind of smell to it.
To me, it's like I poured some... honey out of the jar and it's like right in front of my face. It's so obviously honey. I don't know how that works.
I just have realized the more I've tasted these kind of beers, the less I like honey beers, because just something about it doesn't mesh well for me. I know a lot of people like them. Just the combo, I mean, it's good, but again, it's got that, like, that little vomity putrefied honey. It's just honey itself.
It's a little pukey.
Like a little pukey. It's a little pukey. And it's not a good thing. So, but yeah. So, what'd you learn today, Nick, after that?
I learned that Warsteiner is the queen of beers. I didn't know we had a queen.
I didn't know the beers had a queen. I guess Budweiser's the king of beers, and Warsteiner's the queen, we now know.
Wow.
The royal family of beers.
They're married.
Aw. Let's see. What did I learn? I learned that if you go to Belgium and you go to Cantillon, they'll serve you your lambic in a kind of lightly beat up Bud Light pint glass.
Oh.
Or at least they should anyway.
I forgot one shout out. We had a nice gentleman come up to us at Cantillon on their way out. They were fellow American travelers. They had bought a bottle. And the way it works at Cantillon, you get the tasters for doing the tour. But otherwise, there's very few beers you can actually just get, like, a glass of, except for, like, a fresh lambic off of the cask. The other option is you buy bottles. And they're, like, 750-mil bottles of a very sour beer. And so... if you've got just a couple people splitting a bottle, it might be a bit much. So it's not uncommon for people to say, hey, like, we've got a little bit left in this bottle. Do you guys want it? Like, they were on their way out and said, hey, we can't finish this. Do you guys want it? Because our glasses were noticeably empty at that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got to try an extra lambic there. It might have been a goose, but it was just a nice little gesture there.
Mm, that is a very nice gesture.
Yeah, so shout out to, I think his name was David.
David. So if you live in America and your name is David,
thank you.
You could be one of the ones that we think. Narrows it down. But yeah, so if you are going on a very special trip to the Europine region, let us know. If you have anything to add to our discussion today, we'd love to hear it. You can reach out to us via our email, eastcarolinabeer@gmail.com, Instagram, Secondary Fermentation, Facebook, East Carolina Beer and Brewing. Not too active on Facebook these days, honestly. Not really on X. Not really any of that. Yeah. Just mainly Instagram, email. That's a good way to get up with us.
Yeah, I mean, and Threads is kind of just an extension of...
Yeah, yeah. If you said something on Threads with us, I forget that all of our Instagram posts go to Threads, so...
Yeah.
Guess I'm not, and we'll get the notification, we'll interact with you. But other than that,
it's kind of a symbiotic relationship.
It is. Just leeching off the back of Instagram. But in a good way.
In a good way.
So we will see you in episode number 91. Cheers.
Cheers.